Today on the Guy at the Movies podcast, we are diving into the latest of the writer's strike. We are talking about why Richard Dreyfuss is now Sean's number one enemy. And we will dive into Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 with Hayden joining us once again to get into all the good stuff that we have planned. Let's hit it.
Hayden. Everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had. So this movie was garbage.
What is this?
You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing, you know what I mean?
How? You know, you're lucky to have me back.
You're never going to get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up.
So chaotic.
Welcome back to the Guy at the Movies podcast. I am Joe. He is Sean. We are joined by our distinguished guest, Hayden from the Dive In. How are you, Hayden?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be back. There's some fun stuff to talk about, a lot of good movies on the horizon. So, yeah, I'm doing really well. It's been a couple months now since I think we've done an episode for the Oscars. So
it's been a minute.
I'm looking forward to getting into everything.
Yeah, lots to get into today. Sean, what's going on with you as we dive into episode 143?
There is not much. My wife just texted me promising brunch pancakes. So, we're going to be moving through this one as quick as possible, and then I'll just be eating my face off for my second breakfast because I'm a hobbit.
You're a hobbit. Okay. That makes sense.
As you deserve to be.
Yes.
We are recording a second podcast after this, just as a reminder. But anyway.
I'm good. We're going to keep it flowing. We're going to keep it good. I'm not going to rush through everything. I'm going to take diligent time and notes for this.
Go ahead, Aiden.
The pancakes are a mile away at this point, but you'll get there.
It's good to have something to work towards.
A little upset that I didn't get the text message, but whatever. Speaking of Connecticut,
a bit of a commute. Yeah, but
speaking of Connecticut, I fell into a TikTok hole of Chris Hansen videos last night. When he relaunched his show, they set up shop in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Did they really? I never knew about this.
I was going to send you videos last night, but it was like 11 o'clock and I'm like, it's going to be weird if I send him like Hansen versus Predator videos.
Predator videos.
11 o'clock at night. The evening dose of how to catch a predator.
I have to look this up. I feel like I would have found out about that. That's like, it would have crossed my table, I think.
Yeah, it crossed your table. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was interesting. I fell into a hole with that. All right, let's dive into what people are here for, all of the movie talk. Let's start off with the trailers. We have to start with Dune Part 2. We finally got the first look at the continuation or the second half of this epic that we got, 2 years ago at this point? Which is wild to me that it was that long ago. But Hayden, what were your thoughts on this trailer?
I thought it looked magnificent. I think everything people were complaining about with the first Dune movie, Dune Part 2 promises to do just all the action. It looks like a total spectacle. I'm a simple man. If you put someone riding a giant sandworm in your trailer, I'm just going to go see it in IMAX. That's how it works. So I thought it looked fantastic. I think the expanded cast of Lea Seydoux, Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, they all look like they're going to do some great stuff in this one. And Timothée Chalamet also looks like he's, you know, improved at least what he's going for with this character a little bit. I know a lot of people were kind of frustrated with how, you know, muted he played that character in the original film, but I thought he was fine. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he continues to expand on that character.
That's really good analysis there. I do think that everyone seemed to have upped their game in this trailer. And Austin Butler, by the way, looks phenomenal. And I'm very excited to see him in a role like this after Elvis. So it should be interesting. Sean, what was your take?
I mean, I absolutely adored this. I think there's a there's a bias on how excited I am for this that I just said, like, hey, no matter what they're going to put out, I'm going to be very excited and I'm going to love it. At the same time, this did exceed my expectations still. I really loved the way this looked. I think it's just so fancy. I think one of the most important things is a lesser film would have shown more in the riding of the sandworm sequence. Where this one, you barely see the sandworm. You barely know what's going on. Like,
true.
They're very important on showing something real and gritty. And by the time you do, you're still not seeing everything. Like, someone else would just, like, overinflate it with CGI and would, like, just create.
All right. Name Marvel. Call out Marvel.
I'm not even going to call out Marvel. I'm not even going to call out Marvel because I'm just going to say that, like, I love that this has this real grit. I think about the first moment in the first Dune movie, which was not like any sort of amazing sci-fi shot with a bunch of crazy monsters or anything. It was some sort of machine picking up spice, and it looked like a garbage truck. And I love that, like, this is what this movie is about. It has that, like, even though it is unbelievably fantastical, it has that gritty realism that just absolutely rules. And I'm just, like, so excited on the imagery of this. People are just, like, hearkening so many images of each one to, like, different movies. Like, there's an Apocalypse Now shot with those crazy-ass helicopters. And I'm just so excited. I cannot wait. Yeah, Florence Pugh sounds great. I like that we're going to see more of Zendaya here because, you know, we got, like, what, two lines from her in the first one. And just the performers are so talented and humming at a great frequency. I can't wait for this.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was joking around the other day with my friend, and I was like, "Do you think they're going to put it on streaming?" Because remember, like, that was the big thing with Dune back.
Oh, that was wild.
It still did well for being a like day and date release thing, but I'll take it. Like, it still did well in theaters. I mean,
yeah, it looks like Zendaya is going to have some lines of dialogue in this one, and she's not just here to pretend she's in a music video for the entire movie.
I love Zendaya.
Oh, he's the best.
What a gem. Speaking of exceeding expectations, the Gran Turismo trailer came out this week. And I remember when PlayStation first became like such a big thing, there were a couple games that you had to have, and Gran Turismo was like one of them. It was the ideal racing game and the one that pretty much everyone was playing at the time. Apparently there's been like 7 or 8 of them since, which I had no idea. But anyway, the trailer came out for this, and I was pretty impressed with it, or I guess pleasantly surprised. I was expecting just like another racing movie, but I like the angle that this is taking with sort of like they're using the whoever's skilled at the game and then like injecting them into an actual race. It just seems like the stakes are different. Seems pretty interesting, and it captured my attention when I thought this was just going to be another, like, you know, racing movie that gets released and I forget about. Sean, you were into this too.
Yeah, it was more intriguing than I expected because, yeah, I expected just like something where they don't acknowledge the video game, where they just decide like, oh, this is going to be just another video game adaptation about racing. And I'm like, well, that doesn't bring anything original to this. It could still be a fun movie, don't get me wrong, but I like that they're going down this route instead, where this is like it acknowledges the video game's existence and video game players are actually getting involved. I think it's a different way to tell the story. I'm still a little bit weird about it, and I can't exactly put my finger on why. I think maybe just, you know, video game adaptations have a sour place in my mouth. But I'm a little bit more excited than I was before this trailer, definitely.
David Harbour, Orlando Bloom, and Jerry Halliwell from the Spice Girls is my favorite.
I love that you circled that expecting that I was going to know who that was.
Like, well,
good on you for thinking I'm like in that deep of a corner of pop culture.
But she also had her married name on the IMDb, so it threw it off a little bit. But well, Jerry,
her original name was Spice, right?
Yes, it was Jerry Spice. Hayden, Gran Turismo, your thoughts?
So I'm somewhere with Sean on this. I thought, you know, with a movie like this, it's very easy for it to fall into the Need for Speed trap. You know, the 2014 Need for Speed movie with Aaron Paul, which was pretty bad. And
forgot that was a thing.
Yeah, I think most people did. But I don't know. While I was watching this trailer, I thought this does look unique. It looks like, like you said, an interesting angle to tell this story. I like the idea of having it be about gamers who are getting sucked into this world bigger than them. But this could go both ways for me. I think this could be really good and really unique and really interesting, or it could end up being a total cheese fest, and I'm not quite sure where it lies based on the trailer. That being said, it does look a lot better than I had any expectations for it to be, and it does look promising and unique, and the cast is very solid. So I'm going to be there. I'm going to watch it. I'm not too sure what to expect, but Neil Blomkamp directing it is promising for me.
Guys, he's such a fascinating director because he did like 3 movies that were like a combination of sci-fi as a metaphor to South Africa and then kind of disappeared completely. And I'm just so confused by what his trajectory has been. And like, what has he been doing? Help me out here.
He made a horror movie in 2021 called Demonic, which was pretty awful. Just not good at all. And I like his work. So I don't know what happened with that one. It was just a total misfire all around. And now he's back with Gran Turismo. It's a very weird trajectory for his career, but unique nonetheless. So I'm excited to check it out.
He also did a ton of shorts in 2017 and 2018 and 2019. It, like when I say a ton, like 1, 2, 3, like 10 or 11 shorts.
I feel like he became a persona non grata for some reason, and I don't know why, but I think this after like the failure of Chappie and Elysium, I think he just kind of like he just sort of fell off. I don't know what happened to him, but I'm glad to see him back because, you know, I love District 9.
He's also directing a video game.
Okay.
It's called Off the Grid, and then there's another film called They Found Us in development starring Joel Kinnaman. During a camping trip in the Utah wilderness to heal their broken relationship, a father and daughter must fight against a hostile extraterrestrial life form to prevent their abduction to an unknown and terrifying alien world.
Back on track. He's back. He's going to do a racing movie to pay for that, and now he's back. Let's
go, buddy. That's exciting.
Sony's giving him that paycheck.
Yep. He's doing the Barry Jenkins. He's getting the bag.
I'll forever wish we saw his alien movie. Ridley Scott put his foot down on that, but yeah. From what I read about it, it was going to be pretty great. So that's a bummer. But this looks cool.
I'm into it. I think with him behind it too, like that level of intrigue is only increased.
Right. And with video game adaptations these days, you know, like with Last of Us, it adapts the game so perfectly. And then you have, you know, some of these other things like Super Mario Bros., which mileage may vary on that one, but I think taking the approach that they're taking with Gran Turismo, which is like, we're not just going to put a bunch of people in cars and make them race. Like, we're going to actually apply this new idea to it, which is like, the people who like the Gran Turismo video game are getting sucked into this world that are bigger than them. And I think that's unique, and it's a cool angle to try and ride with the story.
By the way, didn't know that was Orlando Bloom the first time I watched the trailer.
Neither did I.
Like, very
looking
like
a little weathered.
I guess he just kind of like Blomkamp, he kind of, you know, just sort of fell off for a bit and, you know, I guess, you know, did his own thing. But now, he came back and whoa.
I'm trying to see who wrote the script for this. And there's three credited screenwriters. One who wrote American Sniper.
Oh, boy.
Another, Zach Balin. Creed 3 is his most recent. And the upcoming The Crow and King Richard. Oh. Interesting. And then the third one looks like he was a writer on Watchmen.
Oh, wow. That's quite an assortment there.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, we'll see how that's kind of rounding out the summer with the big summer releases. So hopefully that is August is a solid release frame for it and it does well. Because I still root for these movies. I want to see them do well. Even though video game movies, I think we're getting a little oversaturated with them. Yeah, all right, let's talk about... There is a lot of them. Let's talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I think we're all pretty much on the same page with enjoyment of this. Hayden, let's start off with you. Tell us about how Guardians hit you.
Right in the feels is how it hit me. I was seated in that theater, and while watching this movie... And I had a good feeling about this one. Prior to going into this movie, I was like, I think this might be the movie that jumpstarts my passion for the MCU again. Mm-hmm. And I was right. While I was watching it, I found myself so overwhelmed with the emotions, with the action, with the humor. And it really reminded me of how it used to feel sitting down for a Marvel movie when everybody in the crowd was excited and clapping and laughing. And it's this big kind of communal experience, which is what I used to love from Marvel before it, you know, dipped in quality the last few years and everybody started to get pissed off with them all the time. And especially it rings particularly impressive after Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, after having seen that movie in a full crowd and just like no laughs, just like it was silent. It was like people were dead in that theater. And then watching this one, there was passion, there was excitement. And it reminded me of when you have a heart beating at the center of these movies, how impressive they can really be. And I thought Guardians 3 was just magnificent.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. Sean, you, I think, shared similar sentiments.
Yeah, I'm probably, I mean, I gave this an A, but I'm probably the lowest of the three of us. There were some things that bothered me. There were some flaws that were there. But in the end, as a whole, this just worked so well that those flaws didn't bother me as much as, like, to, like, actually, like, affect my viewership. You know, I will say, not that anyone liked this part, but I'd say the animal abuse was really tough to watch.
It's a tough set.
You know, when you have like literally like a small raccoon with a bald skin cap saying hurt, I was like, okay, now you're emotionally manipulating me and it's working. So good job. But it was really tough to sit through that kind of stuff. And that like stuck with me for a while. And that was the object. That was the point of it. I love, first of all, that like Gunn was just allowed to take us to this world one last time. Because he's just so good with like sets, and some of them being, of course, CGI, but some of them being just real and honest sets where you're just seeing everything around you that like looks good. It looks great. And yes, this does have an overwhelming amount of CGI, but it fits here. It fits here throughout the whole thing with a mix of some like real time values. I will say, really, really loved these characters and where they all ended up. I mean, you know, there was the expectation. I think I said on this, obviously not thinking this was actually going to happen. I was like, I think all the characters could die. Of course, that's not going to happen. But like, that was one of my like calls after the trailer. And I think the way they did it was much more tasteful, much more risky even. And I like how they like handled each character. They really focused on each character. No one felt like a side character. I even liked, and people are like, this is one of the things that people are hating, but I really liked Warlock. I liked him a lot. I liked how he was treated. He was a comedic effect. And I understand that those that are like really into, like really love the comics and love that character might have felt a little bit cheated out. I get that. I mean, I'm not someone that reads comics. So like for me, it was just something where it's like, oh yeah, they hatched a super villain too early. And he's like kind of like a baby mentally. I love that. I thought that was brilliant. And I think Poulter did a great job there. And the actual villain was amazing. For the love of God, this movie got nominated for best makeup. Give this movie its makeup Oscar. It deserved it in the first one. And the second one, I guess, whatever. It didn't get nominated, whatever. But like this third one, from like the actual villain, who I will say this villain was great for being, like for once, not having a villain where we kind of like side with him. Let's face it. Thanos, Killmonger. We were like, oh yeah, no, they're doing villain stuff. But they do have a point on one hand. This guy was just an absolute bastard. And I love that. I love that he was just straight up sinister. No good at all. No like common message that like could be taken from him. He was just awful. And I like that was there.
I think he's the strongest villain since Thanos.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, he was up at that level. The stakes were high. He didn't care about anyone, really. At the end of the day, it was just focused on his goal. And I thought that's what elevated this movie is that like there actually were high stakes.
Mm-hmm. I think recently with, you know, Marvel movies and movies in general, they're always trying to make you feel something for the villain. And I'm fine with that. And I find that interesting, but I just miss a good old fashioned shithead. And that's exactly what he was. He's just, I was waiting for him to die the entire movie. Wow. When Rocket scratches his face up, I think I was fist pumping. I was like, and it's really awesome to just root for a villain's downfall like this. It's been a long time since I just wanted to see the worst happen to a villain.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I want to go back to Will Poulter as Warlock, because I, as soon as I walked out of that movie, I was like, this is what people are going to be negative about.
Yeah.
And because I think everyone was expecting that he was going to be kind of a central piece and all that. And he had an impact. He really kickstarted the story, essentially. And, you know, what he does is what leads to the events of the film. But this was an introduction to Warlock. He's sticking around. He's clearly going to be a part of the future of the MCU. He's too big of a character in the comics for them to just dispose of this way. So I do think that we're going to see more of him. I thought Will Poulter was genius playing him. But can we talk about who I think a silent MVP of this series is?
You going Pom?
I love Pom. Okay. Absolutely love Pom. Karen Gillan is Nebula.
Oh, yes.
She is phenomenal. And she also has an emotional arc in this movie that is understated and subtle, where she is just as torn up about Rocket and everything else going on as everyone else is. And you see at the end when she kind of lets her guard down and actually starts dancing, like that could be cheesy, right? Yeah. That could be extremely cheesy, especially when Drax starts doing his shit and all that. But even I guess the song really helps too. The Dog Days Are Over. Like, oh, God, I was like, that's a perfect choice. But it just, all of it just really worked. And I think like that made me realize that we saw an arc with her that I don't know that we originally thought we would. I don't know that she originally would have had that impact in the series, or we would have expected her to have that impact in the series. And she ended up being one of the strongest, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunately it was a line in the trailer, which bothers me. But her, you know, when Chris Pratt kind of looks at her as like, you know, ooh, I think I do kind of love her or something. And her delivery of knock it off was like pretty great, because you see her more like humanized, and yet she doesn't lose her sort of angriness of her character. And I really liked how, like, they didn't betray a lot of the characters here. Yes, they've grown. Yes, they've changed in some way, but they're still their old selves. I mean, there's a moment where, like, you know, Drax has become quite human. But there's a moment where he knocks a poor, like, you know, deer dude off his motorbike. And, deer like, dude. He's still an asshole. He's still a little bit of an asshole. I love that they didn't, like, betray the characters, but did allow them to grow in great ways.
Well, I mean, that goes back to having James Gunn as the writer. Like, yes. This was his baby all throughout. We haven't seen different directors, different writers tackle these characters, aside from the Russos tackling, like, the Guardians in the Avengers movies. But I think, like, I mean, we're going to talk about the writer's strike, but there's something to be said for writers sticking to their characters and knowing the ins and outs of where they want to go with the story.
And I do think it's really impressive how every single character gets their credit here. Like, even side characters like Kraglin get like an emotional payoff where I was like, well, how do we have time for this? And how are we balancing it so perfectly? Because like you said, Sean, every character has come so far from where we remember them. But at the same point in time, they're still the exact same. Drax is still going to clothesline someone off a motorcycle. You know, Nebula is still going to have her outburst of rage. And I think all these characters still have these pieces of them that have maintained the exact same while they've grown around the story that's progressed throughout the years. And I think it's just so impressive what he does with giving everyone their emotional payoff, and every single person in this movie gets some sort of arc. And I thought that was pretty amazing.
This movie made me realize how much I enjoy James Gunn as a director and as a writer, because I think that one thing that he does with his movies is he doesn't give you too much time to think about it, which can be a negative in some senses. But what I mean by that is he dives right into what's going on. I mean, we see the impetus for the whole film. That all happens within the first 15 minutes with Warlock and what happens with Rocket and things like that. And I think back to, you know, the Suicide Squad. He did the same thing with the Suicide Squad, starting off on that island right away. And I think that's really interesting and a different take on how superhero movies sometimes take their time to marinate and then finally hit you with like the third act and the stakes. So, you know, I know you're going to talk about this later, Hayden, but that's what makes me excited for him with the DCU and especially taking on Superman. Like, I just feel like we could have a very different, we're going to see a very different take on the DC superhero films than we've seen in the past. Recognizing that Suicide Squad is part of the DC. But I'm excited for that. I want to see what's going on with DC coming up with James Gunn. And I'm all about him kind of directing what he feels drawn to, because I think when he is drawn to a character, when he's drawn to a project, he delivers. Yeah. He continuously delivers.
And, you know, he may not be everybody's flavor. His movies are a very particular style and very particular taste. But if you like them, I think he is one of the best comic book filmmakers of all time. Mm-hmm. I think the way he taps into what makes comic books so entertaining in the first place and what people always loved about these characters in these worlds, he has such a way of tapping into it and giving it emotional levity while keeping that kind of silliness and that goofiness that is so important to what a comic book always has been. Adam Warlock, the criticisms towards that character, I think are valid, but like you said, it's his first appearance and the whole goal. Like, he's pretty much Superman, right? Like, Adam Warlock serves as like the MCU Superman. So what do you do with a character like Superman in a story like this? You kind of have to bring him down to the level of all these characters. And by doing, you do that, you make him a baby in a Superman's body. And I think that that's effective and funny. Like, there's some really, really effective moments where, like, the one where he destroys that guy with his eyes. Oh, geez. And then the little creature is nuzzling at his leg. He's like, I don't like the way that's making me feel. just very, very funny moments with that character that really highlight that he is going to grow into something more powerful and stronger. But at this point in time, he's just a baby. And I found that to be really interesting and really funny. And I can see why it would frustrate some people, but it really worked for me.
I love how this was structured as a low stakes, high stakes adventure after, you know, like volume two being about the world, or actually the first two really about like an entire civilization getting like, you know, destroyed. And this one was just, they have to save their friend, which is probably higher stakes than they've ever had before, but also low stakes in terms of like what is actually happening. And I really like that, you know, they brought that emotional climax like all the way to its end with trying to save Rocket. And I think that was an important part of this whole thing.
Are the Guardians movies the best series in the MCU?
This was brought up, and people have invoked the Captain America trilogy, which I think is pretty close. I think that, like, Civil War, I hate the term overrated, so I'm not going to go there, but I think Civil War is a lot of fun. It is cotton candy. There's not a lot of substance there. Winter Soldier is amazing, and I do like the original Captain America more than most. But after that, like, the other ones have such stinkers as, like, you know, in the second movie or the third movie sometimes, that I think that this one has been relatively consistent. I don't love Volume 2, but I don't hate Volume 2 either. So I think this one has, like, the best quality in an average sense.
I'd also argue that Civil War is less of a, you know, less of a Captain America movie. Absolutely. Because it relies on everyone coming together. It's an Avengers movie.
Yeah.
Hayden, what about you? What do you think?
I think between, at least personally for me, but it's between the Spider-Man, the MCU Spider-Man trilogy, and this Guardians trilogy. Yeah. I mean, the Captain America, like you said, the Winter Soldier is so good, but I really do think Winter Soldier is the highlight there.
Yeah.
Where I really don't feel Civil War as a Captain America movie at all. And First Avenger is good, but it's aged a little weird on rewatch. So I think for me, it's between the Spider-Man trilogy and the Guardians trilogy. But yeah.
I love that Joe Johnston has become the, like, director that I love of bad movies. Like, between Captain America, First Avenger, Jurassic Park 3, it's just like, I love those movies. But, like, if someone says they're bad, I'm like, yeah, kind of. Like, but I still love them.
I don't like Guardians. Why I'm struggling with, like, what I'm about to say is because I hate Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, you're not a fan.
I'm curious about your thoughts on it, because I don't, like, disagree. I'm just curious, what about it?
I thought that it got lost in the story with Ego. I think that that overshadowed a lot of what I loved about the first one. It was unremarkable to me, right. Honestly. What I like about the first one is the same thing I like about this third one, is it focuses in on these individual characters and shows development of each of them. I don't think we got that with the second one. The second one was very much focused on Chris Pratt, Star-Lord, who is fine. He's not my favorite character. I actually really liked him in this one, actually, which is different. If I ever see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 on TV or have the opportunity to watch it, I will lick a wall instead. Like, I will not do it.
I will say that, yeah, the pacing in Volume 2 is pretty tough. The emotional reputation of Yondu, who sent thousands of children to their death, is a little tough. In general, it still has a lot of fun to it. And, like, I do remember, like, when someone, like, did a bunch of snapshots of Volume 2, I'm like, holy shit, this looks beautiful. Like, it still, like, has that great look that I still am not, like, entirely over and just genuinely love. I will say one thing that I feel kind of bad about, like, at the very end of Volume 3, and I guess we've been talking pretty freely about, like, you know, spoilers and such, but we may have to do a spoiler alert at the beginning of this. But I do think, like, the ending tag at the very end that said Star-Lord will return, the entire theater kind of groaned. They're all like, okay. they did not give a shit about him coming back, I sort of had the same reaction. I'm like, it's fine. I mean, I like Pratt in this more than other stuff, so I'm cool with him being there, but it's like, why? I guess he'll just be there for, like, you know, I think he's going to become, like, an Avenger, I guess, instead. Like, but I don't know, man.
Well, they have a lot of, he has his own comic book run. I was going to say Adventures of Star-Lord. That's not what it's called. But I think that there's an opportunity for them to, if they want to do, like, a series or something like that, they probably could throw that out there. But it's interesting because when you watch the interviews with the cast, they're all very much done.
Yeah.
Like, Zoe Saldana is done. She apparently told James Gunn early on, she was like, I don't want to do this forever. Dave Bautista is like, love this series, thanks for the start, fuck off.
Yeah.
And then you have Chris Pratt is kind of like, yeah, well, like, if the story's good. I just think we're going to see him thrown into some other projects, and especially when you have, you're wiping out a bunch of the Guardians here in terms of the fact that, like, we're probably not going to see them again, but you do have some team up movies coming. So they have to keep their bench, you know, in some respects, filled with characters that they can pull into the mix if they want to. And I think he's one of them because he's a draw. People love him.
I do like the people that have like said, I'm done, I don't want to do this anymore, are the people that have to spend like 5 hours in a makeup chair probably every day. Like, so it's like Dave Bautista's like, please no more of this. I'll wear my tiny glasses in Blade Runner instead. Like, please don't do this to me.
Question for you guys. Do you think we're going to see Rocket again? Because, you know, everybody was like, they're going to kill Rocket. And I was like, no, they're not. Disney is not going to allow a certified movie star who only has to hop in an ADR booth every 18 months and get a paycheck. They're not letting him go. So I'm curious if we'll see him pop up
again. No, they're going to kill his three woodland friends instead. And just devastate us all.
I just watched that scene again this morning because someone filmed it and put it on TikTok. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it was so devastating.
So tough.
I think... back to what I was just saying about Star-Lord, I think we're going to see the Guardians pop up in one of the two Avengers movies. I think that they're just going to be on the side. I don't think we're going to see... I think Warlock will ultimately develop into something more, but I think for Rocket and all that, I think we're kind of done the story because James Gunn finished what he wanted to do.
I think this was a cap on it, even though, you know, those characters will have their own adventures for a while. I don't think we're going to see them. I think this the ideal and the implication was like, we're not going to see these guys anymore. They're going to be living their lives. They're all going to be doing their own things. They're going to be downloading more Florence of the Machine songs, but this is going to be it for them. And I kind of love that idea of like, no, they're cool. They're on their own adventures and stuff, but that's it. And I kind of like the idea of like, yeah, sure, you can have like, you know, Bradley Cooper come in like and, you know, just like have like Rocket Raccoon save the day like once maybe in a little bit. But I love the idea of them just being on their own at this point.
Yeah, so do I. I think the MCU has made it really tough for people to accept goodbyes. And I think that this is a perfect goodbye for characters if we don't see them again. I like to know that they're doing well and that they're doing something cool out in the galaxy. And that's all I need to know.
Let's talk about that final scene, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I go back and forth about this, and I haven't seen much discussion. When Chris, and this is the after credit scene, when Chris Pratt, Star-Lord, is sitting there with his grandfather, and of course there's like the tongue-in-cheek thing, there's the nod to, I'm going to say Patrick Swayze, to Kevin Bacon from the holiday special. They're talking about like the old, like an older man or like a guy in his 40s or whatever mowing the lawn or not mowing the lawn, things like that. Is there more to that?
It seems like that's something where there's supposed to be more to that, but I have not read anything that says that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I am not sure. It could have been just like, you know, two guys now living in suburbia complaining about the lawn. But I think it seemed like there was supposed to be a little bit something more to it. They kind of hinted and then just dropped it there where I was like, oh, come on.
Well,
could have been
then
just trolling us.
To then say he's returning, I'm like, what? Why? Like, yeah. You know, like what's the
such
connection
an
there?
Odd move all around.
Like, oh, man.
That legendary Star-Lord thing is a weird idea to imagine not only Star-Lord without the other Guardians, but Star-Lord without James Gunn. So I'm like, be careful how you do this. You know, it's a tricky, tricky balance.
And also to refer to him as legendary.
That's definitely a tongue-in-cheek thing where it's like almost like Star-Lord watched the movie and he said, put legendary there. Like kind of like a fun little move, I guess. But yeah, you're right. It's a weird.
There's also theories about how in the first, this is really ridiculous and I don't put any stock into this, but for the sake of journalism, after the first two movies, it said the Guardians will return and it was like the Guardians logo or Guardians font on black screen, and this is on a white screen. So people are like, does that indicate that there's a variant of Star-Lord coming? Could we have another character or another actor playing Star-Lord in the future? Which, hey, it's the MCU. Anything could happen. But
to use a meme, we all got to go outside and touch grass, man. Like, come on. Like, holy shit, dude.
It's gone too far at that
That's
point.
That's a little bit much. I mean, I get it. I'm obsessing about this shit, too. But holy fuck. That's enough.
Well, listen, I'm glad that we all enjoyed this because we're probably going to have to wait a while outside of the Marvels to see any future MCU projects. Because we have a writer's strike. So let's dive into what this all means. Just a quick summary is that the last writer's strike happened in 2007, 2008. That is when we got the worst seasons of certain shows. And also, that's when we got that Breaking Bad episode with the fucking fly. Do you remember
that,
episode?
Oh, I remember that episode. I still like
that episode.
I need to end this podcast.
This is where the Civil War will start again. It's not Dems and Repubs. It's people that like that fly episode and hate that fly episode. Because you are in one camp or the other. Nobody has been on that one.
Ryan Johnson was cooking with that episode.
I remember that episode ended and I was like, what is this? I vividly remember where I was watching it too.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the last time that we had the we had a strike like this. Essentially, this boils down to a lot of compensation and residual conversations, as well as pension funds, healthcare, and other professional standards. But one of the key pieces here that I think you'll hear, two key pieces. One is the strength of streaming and how the previous contract for the WGA, the Writers Guild of America, didn't cover streaming. So, for instance, syndication used to be such a huge thing, right? You wanted to get an episode or get a show to a certain number of episodes so that the show could be sold to, in the States, it's like TBS and TNT and USA, so they can run those episodes nonstop. You get the writers, everyone involved gets residuals, essentially, right? That's not happening with streaming. So basically what's happening is TV series and other specials and shit like that are being sold to these streamers for a flat rate. And the writers aren't getting anything down the road for the success that they may have. For instance, like, you know, Will and Grace or Schitt's Creek or whatever is streaming that is pretty successful and always being watched. The Office, of course, that's on Peacock now, so it's a little bit different. But the, you know, it's, they're not, the writers aren't getting, and the people involved aren't getting any money from that work like they used to in syndication. So they're not measuring how many people are watching it and paying them based on that. It's basically the entire industry has shifted to streaming more so than traditional means of delivery, and the way that writers are compensated has not adjusted appropriately. The other piece of this is there's also conversations about, you know, a standard payment when it comes to whether a film goes to theaters or to streaming or to television or whatever it may be. And then there's also the conversation around AI. How much can AI be used in the writers' rooms? How big are the writers' rooms? Because a lot of these shows have been shrinking the writers' rooms, and, you know, not paying those writers, like, the difference there. They're just demanding more work, and, you know, shrinking the writers' rooms and keeping people out of work and blah blah blah. A lot of stuff going on. This happens on a regular basis when the industry shifts a certain amount. Every strike of the WGA dating back, I mean, even in the 60s, this happened, is a necessary way, in my opinion, because they're not, you know, the studios aren't budging, is a necessary way to push things forward and to adapt. And what we're seeing right now is a reluctance for these big studios to do so. And big companies to do so, all while their CEOs and all that are getting pretty big paydays. So, you know, the court of public opinion is not in their favor there. But what are you guys' thoughts on this? There's some talk that this could go on through the summer. There's been other talk that they may be nearing an agreement. I don't really know where I fall on that, but we're seeing things like, you know, we're going to talk about Blade being shelved again. Stranger Things is being delayed. This is going to impact a lot of stuff. This, we saw a lot of more reality TV the last time around because they were able to do so, right? Without writers, seemingly. But where do you guys stand on this?
So a lot of stuff is backlogged. And there's, you know, this won't affect us personally as viewers until, you know, boy, like, I mean, I guess some of the basic cable shows that we may watch, like the only thing I can think of is Abbott Elementary. But really, like, you know, most of the basic cable shows will be affected in September. Late night shows and SNL just got, like, you know, they pretty much just can't clobber their seasons just now because they're not going to be able to handle it. Movies eventually will be a problem. I mean, Joe, we have a movie news section on this podcast that is going to get thin because while there are announcements of movies this week, and while there's only going to be announcements of movies because, you know, they're not going to be able to write them, or if they do have the scripts, you still need writers on set. And that's something that really needs to be taken away from this. Because, you know, it came out that they said, hey, House of the Dragons, or House of the Dragon, it's cool. They wrote all the scripts for season two. Well, two things could happen. They could keep going and film it without writers on set. And that is a tremendous problem. Because you think you just have that script, you're good. Writers are there to update things, to punch up things. Like, oh, we can't get dibs on this castle, so we have to change the story around. They'll still do it, and it won't be as good. They'll be like strange reasons. So, you know, they're dealing with not even first drafts of scripts. They could be final drafts of scripts, but those even still continue to change. So that's a huge problem. I'm just so sick of, like, so much of the industry not acknowledging streaming between the Academy, like, you know, constantly pushing streaming down. That's one thing I can understand because they want to keep theaters in business because they're a movie company. But the one that really bothers me is just like these people not acknowledging that most people are cutting the cord and watching streaming. In one generation, very few people are going to be watching basic cable. Very few. And yes, we're still paying probably as much as we would on basic cable with streaming, but that's a whole other thing that we can't even get into now. It just baffles me that the writer of The Bear, one of the most popular shows of the year, easily one of the most popular shows of the year, cannot pay his bills. And I can for teaching a bunch of schmucks math. Oh yeah, hero teacher. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like I don't matter as much as the writer for The Bear. It's just silly to me that like, it's just, you're on mute, Joe. It's just silly to me that like, I can't even fathom that like everybody flocked to see the show. They loved the show. They adored the show. They couldn't stop talking about the show. And the guy that wrote it could not pay bills, and I can.
I said, "All right, Meghan Trainor, go off on teachers."
I mean, yeah, exactly. I'm smoking teachers. Like, I'm someone that's like, yes, teachers should be paid billions of dollars, but they're not worth that much. No one's worth that much. Movies and TVs and shows. It shouldn't be that way. Morally, it shouldn't be that way. But guess what? Like, you know, people aren't going to really care as much about teachers. And yet, like, I'm doing financially better, which I shouldn't be doing financially better than anyone personally. Like, you know, it's I'm not doing well. But I don't know, man. It just bothers me that these are shows that are talked about. This is the pop culture. It's like water cooler shows. And the people that are the foundation of them are getting paid nothing. I get that actors are going to get paid more. I understand that because they're the faces of this stuff. And like, they're the ones that draw you in. You don't really like go to something because this person's writing it. But it just still baffles me that like, they're not given like a proper shake. And AI is one thing as well, where they just said like, we don't want AI. We don't want them to use AI to punch up our scripts or anything like that. And, you know, they just didn't listen. They just said, oh, no, we'll have a meeting about tech every other year. And it's like, that's baffling to me. And AI, you know, it's fun. It's fun that there's all these little articles about how like, whoa, AI wrote this perfect term paper. And whoa, AI wrote this. You can still kind of tell that stuff is AI. And I know that like there's these fun little news articles about how, wow, people thought this was an actual person. I got to be honest, it does not come out perfectly right. And so if you're putting an entire creative process on that, it's not going to come out right. It's iterations of other stuff online. So, you know, pay the damn writers. This is going to like, I personally think this will go through the whole summer. And I think it'll be in September. The Emmys will get canceled and there'll be like a podium announcement like the Globes were in 08. And that's unfortunate, but that is that's the effect that we're going to have to see for this, which sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hayden. I echo everything you said there. I think that it's so bizarre that as streaming evolves and becomes this big thing that is like undeniably such a huge part of the industry that we all love right now, that they're not willing to update it and treat that the way that it actually is. And I didn't even know that story about The Bear, which is a huge TV show. And the fact that the writer of it is unable, like that's one of the best written shows on television as well. And that's just absolutely bizarre to me that writers make the stories that we love. They everything that we come to love, all the actors, all the visuals, everything, all that, that's all built around what the writers set into stone. And the fact that the people who define these stories and create these stories are struggling so much and not getting what they're owed and what is fair credit for them, I think is absolutely bizarre. I just think it's extremely corrupt, and I think that it's completely fair that they're striking the way that they are. I think it's a long time coming. And it is upsetting to think about the idea that it's going to completely dismantle the industry. But sometimes you have to do that to get your point heard and to get everything across. And so I think that the way that this is playing out is frustrating, but it's frustrating because of the fact that these people are not getting what they deserve for their very hard work. And I would like to see a big shift in that because, I don't know, while watching all this stuff, it's actually just so disheartening and heartbreaking to see all these big names just struggling and just like telling their story about how they're just unable to make ends meet. And that doesn't make any sense for an industry that is so huge and to have these projects that are so huge and that they mean nothing to these companies in the grand scheme of things. It's so corrupt. And I think a big shift needs to happen immediately.
One of the points that I read the other day that really bothered me was that studios are proposing that when a writer shadows a showrunner, on set that they treat that as an unpaid internship because they're getting like, you know, skills that will hopefully lead to them being a showrunner. That's pretty much how showrunners are, you know, get the, earn their keep or, you know, or earn their experience and get the experience is that they shadow the showrunners on other shows. The Office is a perfect example of this. If you ever listen to, you know, the Office Ladies podcast or read anything about The Office, like that was such a, you know, the how many of those writers went on to do their own shows, to have their own shows, to write their own shows, to direct, to, you know, have larger careers. And that's, you know, to treat that like an unpaid internship when you're already not paying the writers consistently is annoying.
And it's just so bizarre that if, you know, like I think everybody who works on movies and TV deserves exactly what they're, what, like deserves to be credited for what they're doing. But with writers in particular, it's just so bizarre to see them silenced and sidelined like this. I'm like, these are the stories that, that you want. Like if you don't have the story, you have nothing. And so it's so bizarre that they're just willing to treat them like such garbage. And the AI thing too, I find so scary. I feel like just last year, AI was not something that we were actively considering in any of this sense of what's going on now. But now these studios are seeing all the AI technology and they're mustache twirling villains. They're realizing what they can do with that. And that's deeply scary to me. The idea that human beings won't be writing the stuff that we love. That's something I'm uninterested in. I think that's very weird.
And the problem is that, you know, studios are making money without, like, you know, decent writing or good writing. I mean, you think about like some of these like terrible movies that are just going to make $1 billion right off the bat. And, you know, yes, they had writers, but, you know, they could do it with AI. And like that sort of terrifies me as well. I mean, it wouldn't be good. And they don't care. They don't look at a Rotten Tomatoes score. They look at a box office score. They look at the amount of subscribers a show gets. And, you know, like, okay, but there, and this also, the writer's strike is also talking about transparency on how much a show is being watched, because they don't have that right now. Like, Netflix just says, hey, this is the number one show watched. We don't know if that's true or false. I mean, we really don't. And, you know, maybe it is true, who knows? But, like, there's no evidence suggesting that. And that part is just really troubling to me, especially because, you know, a writer could get their credit for having that being the number one streaming show, but they don't end up giving them credit because there's no like box office like there is for theaters where everyone can find this out. And instead it's just like everyone's just, you know, hiding their cards of what is the most watched show, or it's just like tough for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with all that. I would also argue that every Liam Neeson movie has been written by AI.
I mean, guess what, the next one will be, because it'll just be a regurgitation of what happened before. Like
that's what they all are.
Yeah. exactly. Yeah, they can just do that.
That's what his movies are.
Almost positive that Ghosted was written by an AI.
Ghosted was, and also Citadel, yes.
it's one thing when it's, you know, like all the memes that go out about Drake's music, like AI making Drake songs and stuff like that. It's funny to laugh at, and then you think about it for a minute longer, and it gets very scary, because the idea that AI can just show up and effectively destroy art, you know, destroy original voices, destroy creative freedom. I think it's one thing to laugh at it in a joke capacity, like, oh, Drake is singing Sweet Home Alabama, but then it gets really scary the longer you really sit on that idea. And I think that's what's going to happen with this, with AI writing movie scripts. It's like it just won't be able to effectively recreate human dialogue and human behavior, and yet studios are going to be fine with it. They're going to be like, whatever, it's good for the streaming numbers, so let's do it.
I'm with you there. It is kind of, it's frightening. This is a very frightening thing. Hopefully there is some movement with this strike, but we'll be talking about it for weeks to come, I unfortunately presume. One of the movies that's been impacted is Blade, right after they added an additional writer on the MCU movie. I'm so confused by Blade. And here's why. I thought it was going into production after they like got rid of the director back in whenever. They were moving forward with it, but then all of a sudden they bring on another writer, but then it's like they're on strike, and then all of a sudden they're delaying the film again. Like, what is going on with this project? Does it exist? Will it ever exist? Do we care? Hayden, do you care?
Mia Goth, Delroy Lindo, and Mahershala Ali. Yes, I care. But it does seem like an absolute disaster watching the behind the scenes for this movie. I mean, I know that this is a little more out of their control, but just following the production for it in general for the last year and a half, 2 years is messy to say the least. And so this is not good for it, for sure. This is not what they needed while this movie has already struggled so much. But Yeah, I care. I hope they can get I hope they can get their shit together with it, but I know now it's a little out of their control, and yeah, I'm rooting for it, but I don't know if we'll ever see it.
Just Nick Pozzolato writing something with Mahershala Ali, Mia Goth, and Delroy Lindo in there. I'm just going to be skipping into the theater when this comes out in 2027. But that is just such a great lineup. But yeah, I mean, it's baffling that they're just adding more here. And if this is a punch up job, I mean, it's going to be interesting to think that Nick is going to do a punch up job. That dude is just like the weirdest man alive. But I don't know. I mean, I'm still excited for this, but I think we're going to get a lot of these. A lot of stuff's going to get shelved. Right now we've heard Blade and Stranger Things. There will be a chance that I'm kind of seeing House of the Dragon getting shelved, even though they have the writers done. I think that's going to be something that ends up getting shelved just because they want writers on set, because that is such a huge part of the show, part of creating things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here.
I think one of the things that worries me is we're looking for the MCU to get back into a good storytelling mode, right? And link all these things and build the larger story that's at play here. And when you have movies that all feed into one another and we start getting delays like this, that's what really worries me, because I feel like the MCU slate is going to be stretched out or, you know, not be as impactful. I wonder if they're going to move the Marvels, honestly, because the Marvels is supposed to be, in a couple months here, it's this summer. But what's after the Marvels?
Somewhere in between, I think there's a series, Secret Invasion. There's Marvels. And then I think that's it. I think they were planning on taking a break anyway, because I think Feige said it and also Iger said it. It's like, yeah, we kind of shoved a lot of content down your throats. I think the solution is the exact opposite. Yeah. So they were going to put a slowdown anyway. So this kind of works for them. But not completely, obviously. But I think that everything else is just sort of, they're still prepping stuff. They're still working on things, but it's going to be, there's not going to be a lot that we're going to see for a little bit.
I find it so interesting too that Guardians 3 is the most highly received Marvel movie in a long while, and it has nothing to do with the current story that they're trying to tell. Yeah. And so it sets up this very interesting idea of is Marvel's solution going to the DC approach? Spreading these stories out a little bit and making them less intertwined? Because really, honestly, while I was watching Guardians 3, I was so happy to not be hearing constant name drops to other characters and what has defined Marvel so recently is just this attempt to have all these dialogue and interconnecting threads. And I think at this point, for me at least, aside from the main story they're trying to tell with Kang, it's become a little bit suffocating to have characters constantly be like, oh, Iron Man and Captain America, they're all dead now. I don't know. I find that uninteresting. And so I thought with Guardians 3, this approach to the storytelling was unique. And so it puts Marvel in an interesting spot of where do they go from here? Do they try and separate these stories a little bit, because really Blade's not gonna fit into the larger story they're trying to tell with Kang or anything like that. It's really interesting, and I like that they're slowing down. I think that's the solution for sure.
Yeah, I think they've exhausted themselves with trying to find connections, and also they've exhausted audiences with that. That's been my criticism with a lot of since Endgame. I mean, Endgame was this beautiful Marvel universe that wrapped up perfectly, and I get it, you still want to make movies, you still want to have a cash cow, but they really have just been hanging on to what's been happening in the past and in this universe still. And I'm thinking you just gotta move a little bit fast past this and, enjoy yourself a little more.
I would actually argue the opposite with people wanting or being tired of the connections and stuff. I think that part of what's hurt Marvel is that the connections over Phase 4 weren't clear, and we've been trained to look for them. And after, honestly, I mean,
no, I see that, yeah.
And so how many movies and TV shows do we have where we didn't see the connections? And it was a lot more foundation laying. Potentially, we're not going to see those larger connections for quite a while now. And I think that that's one thing that's going to work against them. But as Hayden brings up, it is very interesting that Guardians is being so well received, and it really takes place aside from anything else they have going on. No mention of Kang and no mention of the Celestial that's coming out of the Earth.
I just love the idea that people have said, is this good for Marvel that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is this good and well received? I'm like, no, it's not. Yeah, because it is not. They're getting some credibility and some money right now, but then you look at all the other projects coming and it's like,
yeah.
James Gunn's like, see ya. I'm out of here. Enjoy this victory run. I'm gone.
Yeah. Bye. to getting the bag, as Sean would say. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Sean's friend, Richard Dreyfuss. So he is receiving some backlash right now because he commented on the new Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences standards that will take effect in 2024, where films will have a new inclusion standard that will require them to have a certain percentage of actors or crew from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups. Richard Dreyfuss, never one to mince words, said on PBS, quote, "They make me vomit. This is an art form. It's also a form of commerce, and it makes money, but it's an art." I'm not really sure where that sentence was going.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. That's not a sentence that makes sense.
No one should be telling me as an artist that I have to give in to the latest, most current idea of what morality is.
Okay.
Sean, take it away.
I'm going to just really quickly state this. This guy has retired, so there's a chance that he's going to get left out of voting anyway. So, for the part of that, I already love it. He's just going to be a member of the Academy that, because he's not in a property, he's just not going to get voted out. He's not going to get a vote anymore, which I find lovely. This guy's an asshole right now, because first of all, it's a complete misunderstanding of these diversity rules. Let me just put it this way. If you would like a movie to have an all-white cast, first of all, weird thing to want. Weird thing to want, but okay. If you are desperate for your movie to have an all-white cast, it can still have an all-white cast. This is a percentage of the cast and crew has to be meet a certain level of diversity. So if you don't want to see any dark faces in your movie, you still get that. You're still going to be okay, buddy. And, Dreyfuss is going to die in 5 years anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But you'll be good, buddy. It'll be okay. You get to see your white faces still in movies. But it's just that a certain amount of the crew has to be there to try to get a leg up in Hollywood and try to get a more diverse Hollywood, which, just let's face it, is still not there. And we saw this through the campaign where Deanna Detweiler did not get nominated. And it was because there was this really cool whisper campaign, this grassroots campaign that I did genuinely like for Andrea Riseborough, and she deserves that nomination. But it just showed that there was a lot of inside working. And most of the friends that were working with that were all white people that were just knowing each other. So there's still not a very heavily diverse Hollywood. Yes, they've worked better with the Academy. Yes, that kind of yes, there's that, but it's still not as good. So I just can't emphasize, this guy has a misunderstanding of the rules. He definitely saw a blurb on Fox News that also misunderstood the rules and don't understand that. Yes, sure, there's still an importance to this rule. I like this rule, but it's not something that's going to solve everything. And it's not something that's going to visually look fine. And it's just something that is just going to help people behind the scenes start to get more jobs. And then maybe that can lead to a more diverse Hollywood and more higher ups that will be of diverse backgrounds, which is just still just desperately needed. And it's weird that you think otherwise. And this is just an old white guy just pissed about his race being equal to others now. And I'm sick of that.
Let me tell you that Twitter is a cesspool right now around this story. While this isn't what he said, this did make me laugh. You thought he was dead, but your childhood hero Richard Dreyfuss is back, and he doesn't understand why he can't do blackface. And it kind of, he gets into it saying, am I being told that I will never have a chance to play a black man? Is someone else being told that if they're not Jewish, they shouldn't play the Merchant of Venice? Shit like that. But then this, here's an example of the discourse on Twitter. Richard Dreyfuss is 100% correct. The whole world isn't gay. The whole world isn't trans. And the whole world doesn't like the same things, people existing. As an artist, you shouldn't have to cater to specific groups to make activists happy. Kudos to him for having the guts to say it. Oh, God.
This is an old man yelling at the clouds.
So yeah.
Oh, you woke propaganda. Shut up.
I will say it right now. 9 of the Best Picture nominees next year will have a white main character. What are we doing here that we're actually worried about this, dude? I am a white gentleman. Am I worried about my race coming under attack? No, because guess what? It's so fucking ridiculous to think that. I'm getting equality. I'm getting these more diverse background stories. I'm getting these actors and actresses that I haven't seen before instead of the same iterations. It's just so silly to think this way. I don't get it. Oh, God.
It's a white man saying, so you're telling me I can't win an Academy Award for doing blackface? Yes, that is exactly what we're telling you.
Well, Robert Downey Jr. almost got that, but
that one's different. But we
it's
won't
different
get into
and it's still amazing. And it's my favorite comedy ever. But still, that was 2008, my guy. Guess what? Things are still going to be fine for you.
The quote, am I being told I will never get to play a black man, is hilarious. Yes, sir. Yes, exactly. You were being told that. And like you said, Sean, it's it's diversity behind the scenes, it's diversity on camera, but it's really about building a Hollywood that's more representative to the world and how the world around us, the stories that are around us. And I, of course, it's a 75-year-old old white man who was just like, ah, this makes me angry.
Who, by the way, was always an asshole. Like, yeah, that's true. He was an asshole. This guy was a shitty person to work with, and that's why he's not as famous as he is, like, you know, like these days. Because like,
I thought you guys were good friends. Didn't you guys used to hang out?
Never, never. Maybe once on the SS Minnow, but thankfully he hid behind the coral while I took care of the shark.
Not to be outdone, Dean Cain is also chiming in on shit on Twitter. I just fell into a hole on Twitter. Of like right wing shit.
You have a bad algorithm on Twitter. I just want to say that you do
it's
have a bad.
Because I engage and I shouldn't engage. But Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, tweeted about this is freedom to be shot at a mall, shot at school, shot at church, shot at the movies, and basically was making a push for gun control of some sort. And Dean Cain said, "I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery." Okay. I can't with this timeline we're in. Wow. Reset it. Reset it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to
maybe Thanos was right.
This is I'm actually worried now because they're going to have to drop that new Dean Cain project.
What's the
exactly?
Thank you.
sorry, dude.
Oh, God. All right. Let's move on here. We need to talk about Gladiator 2 and the ever growing cast, which is pretty exciting. excuse me. The most recent news is that Pedro Pascal has joined the cast, joining Paul Mescal.
Pascal's.
Barry Keoghan, Joseph Quinn, Connie Nielsen, Denzel Washington, Ridley Scott's directing. This is wild to me. I don't understand what's happening, but I'm very excited for it.
I'm telling you, the people that are involved in casting are just on the internet all the time. And they're like, this guy. Pascal, they're saying his name a lot. Put him in there. But he like started with a Sword and Sandals epic. I mean, he started like with Game of Thrones and he was great in that. So I think they're going to like throw him in here, like kind of in that natural ability where you fell in love with his character on Game of Thrones. And I think I'm excited to see him here. Like, I'm excited.
This might be the most attractive cast known to man. Yes. Like, I think it's genuinely impressive. I like what you said, Sean, about how like whoever's casting for this movie is just chronically online. And they're just like, yeah, these guys. Everybody's obsessed with these guys. I might be the biggest Paul Mescal fan ever. Like, I've just become such a huge fan of his work. And I've become so obsessed with watching just interviews of him. I think he's so charming and so fun to watch. I just think he's really one of our next great actors. And
he's great.
I'm really excited about this cast. I don't know if I was pining for like a Gladiator 2, but with this cast and the way it's all coming together with Ridley Scott coming back for it, I think that there must be some sort of vision here that's worth telling the story. So I'm excited for it. And Pedro Pascal, it's great to see him in here as well.
As the founder of the Paul Mescal fan club, Hayden, are you excited about the rumor that he might be playing Johnny Storm?
Oh my God. Yes. I saw that the other day and I lost my mind. That's perfect. I would love that. Honestly, all the Fantastic Four rumored castings are pretty fantastic. No pun intended. No pun intended. So I'm really excited about the idea of him playing Johnny Storm, about the idea of Adam Driver playing Mr. Fantastic. And I believe it's Margot Robbie is being talked about as Sue Storm, right?
Yeah. At this point, I love how they just didn't really like they're going for like the ultimate superstars here. Like, Mescal's not at the superstar level yet, but those other two, it's just like, oh yeah, no, we're shooting for the moon on this thing.
By the time Fantastic Four comes out, he might be.
he will be by then. Yes, he's like, Gladiator 2 is gonna easily skyrocket him there.
They need that next Avengers movie to hit, so they're like, all right, just get us superstars for this next phase.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Next story here is, did you guys know that there's a Cloverfield sequel, like an actual Cloverfield sequel in development?
Yeah, not like where they tack on the name Cloverfield to two movies that definitely have nothing to fucking do with Cloverfield, like the other two Cloverfield sequels.
Well, it's definitely happening. It's in the works. And the Slusho website. So back in when the first movie came out, there was a Slusho website that was created that was like viral marketing and it was loosely tied to the movie, blah, blah, blah. The website went live again. So it is kind of weird when you go to the website. It's all about like mixing flavors and shit. And I have no idea what it's. Of course, I spent some time on it the other day trying to like find if there's like a key to unlock this, you know, a scene or something. But the first Cloverfield movie, I remember when that first hit, it was so much fun. And it was such like a different vibe than we were expecting. I'm really interested to see where they take this story.
I there's a part of me that just thinks that someone else bought the domain for this Cloverfield website. And they are just like, they're just like, oh, we're going to like, you know, put our, we're going to like exercise our brand. And now everyone is ignited. Like, there's a new Cloverfield movie coming out. It's like, no. We just bought the website. It's like our company that we're trying to make happen.
It's real slusho.
Yeah. We're like this new slusho slushy, vegetarian slushy company. they feel so bad. They're like, oh no, we ignited all these rumors. Yeah, I would very much love to see there to be a Cloverfield movie that actually plans on being a Cloverfield sequel instead of the just weird bullshit that were these last two movies, which I, by the way, I do love 10 Cloverfield Lane as its own separate movie, but there's no way in hell that was designed to be a Cloverfield sequel until it was like done filming way after it was done filming. And they said like, all right, let's put a mailbox that says Cloverfield and that's it. Like,
throw a monster in the last 30 seconds and we'll call it a day.
This baffles me. Like, so at this point, it's like, and then they just justify it in the third one and be like, yeah, there's two separate worlds. That's why the monsters look different. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm done. And so, yeah, I just really, really genuinely hope this is a genuine, like, actual sequel. And it would be cool to see that. I would be like, because I really loved the first Cloverfield. It was a lot of fun. But
I agree. Yeah, I don't know. Cloverfield's just one of those. It's a found footage gem that now people are starting to talk about it a lot. But for a while, there was no conversation around it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that movie is just really unique. It's really creative and really fun. I always forget it's directed by Matt Reeves, which is just wild to me.
Yep.
But I'm excited about the idea of an actual sequel that, you know, expands on the original movie itself without little tie-ins that mean nothing. And I want to see more of this monster because the monster is so unique and so creepy looking. So I don't know what the approach for a sequel to Cloverfield would be, but if they can find something worth coming back and telling the story again, then I'm more than interested. The Slusho website is so weird to me. Like, what was the tie-ins to the movie back when it originally launched in 2008?
It was a teaser trailer came out, and then they didn't even like announce the name of the movie. They just put you on a website. And then I remember the website just had three images that you could just move around. And that was it. I remember this was like a huge thing. Like, this was back when people used to do nothing on the internet where like they would just waste time. Like, and so people were like moving around these pictures. They're trying to figure out the way it went. And then like, finally there were like epic trailers that actually talked about this being a movie. But before that, there was not.
The tie-in was that back when the first movie came out, there was like this whole thing about the Slusho drink having an ingredient that's only found on the floor of the ocean. And so it was like, did that wake the monster or something?
Okay. Interesting. It's a reach, but I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. So that happened. final story here. And my favorite story of the year is that Guy Ritchie has just achieved the best possible cast for his next movie. It is putting Henry Cavill and Jake Gyllenhaal in the same movie. I will die. I am already dying. I am so excited. And Isaac Gonzalez from Fast and the Furious, Hobbs and Shaw, is also joining this. There's no word.
Right?
An Ambulance. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She was great in that.
She was great in Ambulance. There's no real idea of what's going on in this movie. Like, we don't really know like the plot or anything like that. But those two in a movie together, fuck. Sign me up. I'm so pumped.
Does he have any more time? Is he okay? Guy Ritchie like is just like making. He's got two movies released this year. He's got a movie I think coming out basically at the end of this year. I don't even like or coming out soon. And it's just
the Ungentlemanly Warfare one.
Yeah, I think maybe that's next year. I hope it's next year because this dude like just like is absolutely just like pooping films in the best way possible.
He also has the weirdest IMDb in terms of the films that he does. I mean, like when you think back to like Sherlock Holmes and then you have The Covenant and you have Wrath of Man, and then you have Aladdin, then you have King Arthur and then The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Forgot that he wrote the screenplay for that, but that he also worked with Henry Cavill there too. So that's kind of cool.
He's got a lot of one for them, one for me energy with his career. Like he'll like direct Aladdin and then he's like, and then I'm going to get all my buddies to swear in tuxedos. So, like, I feel like his next movie is going to be a real Guy Ritchie movie, just put that title. What is it? The Ungentlemanly
Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
God, that's like an AI generated Guy Ritchie title.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, sure.
Make a Guy Ritchie movie. All right, here it is.
The British military recruits a small group of highly skilled soldiers to strike against Nazi forces behind enemy lines during World War II.
Sounds wicked. I'm here for it. I think Guy Ritchie is awesome. Even if his movies don't always hit, he's just such a unique filmmaker in regards to the fact that he's always going to do whatever he wants with the story. And, you know, he'll do Aladdin every once in a while, but then he'll just, like I had mentioned, he's just going to get Jason Statham to just do his thing. And the idea of him getting Jake Gyllenhaal and Henry Cavill in a movie together is extremely exciting. I haven't seen the Covenant yet. Is that what it's called?
Oh yeah. I haven't seen it either. Joe was a little bit sour on it, right?
Oh, it was fine.
Yeah.
It hasn't even released in theaters here in Canada. Oh no. Yeah, they just didn't release that one in theaters. It's just not available for me to watch, so I'm just going to have to wait for VOD for that one. But I've heard Jake Gyllenhaal is pretty good in it, and the idea of Guy Ritchie, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Henry Cavill teaming up for whatever they're going to do is exciting.
You like to see actors go back to a director because you know that there was good experiences happening there, that they like make some good stuff, and it's been allowed that they can go back, which is the case for a lot of these actors here.
This cast for Ungentlemanly Warfare is really fascinating, though. It's Henry Cavill, Alan Richson, Isaac Gonzalez is in that as well. Kerry Ewells, Alex Pettifer, Hero Fiennes Tiffin, Henry Golding. And then there's another guy that's playing Ian Fleming, who, you know.
Oh, nice.
So it's so fascinating to me. Oh, it's based on a book, apparently.
Ooh.
Oh.
Did you did you guys like Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre?
I did not. I think I gave it like a D, but it only went up from a D because it's like it had the Guy Ritchie-isms that were fun enough that like I still had a good time, but I was just like I kind of didn't know where this movie like sat in the place of like anything. It was just such a strange movie.
It's a very weird movie. I think
Hugh Grant is basically playing Trump, but like, you know, more energetic. Like it's such a strange thing. It's so odd.
It's worth watch just for the Aubrey Plaza performance. But aside from that, a lot of it is a very weird movie. It feels like an AI, like you had mentioned. It feels like an AI made a Guy Ritchie movie, and I think that's what a lot of his new movies are going to feel like.
I want Aubrey Plaza in more Guy Ritchie movies because you could tell that she was having a blast, and I just want to see her in something that's a little bit better than that. And because I think she can chew that dialogue pretty well.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, Hayden.
I was just gonna say I don't know if I've ever like really, really loved a Guy Ritchie movie, but I'm always gonna be seated for a Guy Ritchie movie.
Oh yeah.
Or at least since his early work. I don't know. The Gentleman in Snatch are, I think, maybe my favorites from him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to find this. I'm not going to find it. Anyway, Aubrey Plaza was on a red carpet or something. Think it was. You know, they asked her what her last name was or something. And she said, like, slut bottom or something like that. That's not exactly what she said, but something along those lines. And then it was so funny because, like, they just continue with the interview and she turns to whoever she's with and she was like, like, I don't know.
You see her on talk shows, and she is so damn awkward and so strange. And I think it is intentional. It's like because she's fucking with people, but it's just so tough sometimes to see. So when you said like you see Aubrey Plaza on the red carpet, I was like, oh god.
All right, let's get into rants and raves for the week. I want to start off here. This pissed me off a lot of it. As drag performers continue to be villainized, one thing happened last week that really was kind of crazy. There was a drag brunch in Columbus being hosted by a drag queen named Virginia West, and it was a benefit for a local LGBTQ plus organization that works with at-risk LGBTQ children, meaning like providing supports and things like that. Protesters showed up with ski masks over their faces, carrying Nazi flags with Nazi symbols and stuff, and a banner that said "There will be blood," and chanted sayings like "Under the Aryan sun and no transgenders on our streets." The drag show went on, which I think was great, and like Virginia West did "This Is Me" from The Greatest Showman, which is like a staple now in like every drag show. But it was outside and she was like just meeting them where they're at. I think the thing that gets me about this is, number one, we have literal fucking Nazis walking the streets, and like that's apparently fine in America. But the other thing that gets me is, why are you covering your faces?
Yeah.
If you're that
proud of it.
Yeah, you should be proud of it. If you're going to go out there and you're going to confront and whatever, why are you covering your face? Because you don't want to lose your job because of these mm-hmm. views? Because you don't want people to know that this is you carrying these shitty fucking dated views that are, you know, have been left behind for good reason? Like, what's going on with you? I can't believe that, like, we've gotten to a place where, like, a drag show is being villainized when it's raising money to support kids. Like, it just, it's beyond insane to me that this is, I keep saying the timeline, but the timeline that we're living in.
Yeah. I will say, just shout out to Virginia West for basically, like, first of all, being awesome and showing up on those Nazis and, like, you know, singing that song in front of them and everything, but also, like, the model for the at-risk gay and transgender youth, saying that, like, you know, these guys aren't going to do shit. They're bullshit. Yeah. They're full of shit. Fuck them. And I think that's, like, you know, like, having that sort of, taking that stand is such a solid move. Like, just more, not even for, like, cameras or anything that we were able to see it, but for those kids. It's just so cool to, like, see her, like, just, like, absolutely show up for them and just, like, take a stand against them, showing that, like, yeah, no, we're not going to cower in fear. This is bullshit. Fuck them. Yeah. They're little mask-wearing losers.
So these guys genuinely climbed into their car with ski masks on and signs that said, "There will be blood," and they went, "Let's go stop the villains."
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
that logic is so broken and evil that these guys could actually dress up like street-level supervillains out of a movie and then just be like, "All right, it's time to go stop the real problem." It's fucking disgusting and really just deeply upsetting. And like you said, Sean, good on Virginia West for just absolutely just flexing on them and being like, "You're not gonna do shit. You guys are not scary."
Hey, Joe, help us out for a second. How far does the First Amendment go? Because I don't think it's threats for that. I think that's a little, like, "There will be blood." I don't think they were promoting the movie. I think, how, like, at that point, like, it's like, how far do those First Amendment rights go? Because I think they're really skating that line.
You're exactly right that they're skating a line. I mean, it's not a direct threat. It's a statement. But they're definitely skating a line there. I think this is just so frustrating in so many ways because it's, again, villainizing people that are different. And, you know, all the right wing talking points here in the US are so fucking manufactured and a distraction from the larger issues that are truly happening and that aren't being dealt with. And I've met Virginia West back a couple years ago. One of my really good friends from college was living in Columbus. And ironically, this is actually really funny. My buddy Chris, when he started dating his now wife, she's a big Drag Race fan, and then he turned into, like, a Drag Race fan too. So I went out one weekend and we went to, like, a drag brunch, and then we went to a big show. But they do these, like, fantastic shows, and I remember that brunch was so much fun because it was an all ages brunch, and they did, like, Disney songs, and, like, the kids were loving it, and it was just, like, a great, you know, it was families that were there, and, like, that was really heartwarming to see, because at the end of the day, it's just a form of performance art, right? It's not, it's like taking your kid to a movie that, like, you approve of them seeing. And we talked about that before on this podcast, Sean.
Well, Mrs. Doubtfire is now rated R, right? It has to be.
Right. Mrs. Doubtfire, they should pull it. Like, they should pull it.
It should not be on ABC Family anymore.
Yeah.
Or Freeform, whatever the fuck. But what are we doing here?
But yeah, it's just, it's so, I don't know. I just can't believe that this shit's happening. And it's so frustrating. Is Canada like this?
It's not. It's not that bad. It's not Nazis walking around with "There will be blood" signs, but there's still some pretty upsetting shit that I hear about pretty consistently. Just the other day in Halifax, some people were arrested for burning a pride flag. So it's still bad. Yeah.
Yeah. See, when someone burns a pride flag in the U.S., they get elected to Congress. So that's how we handle it. But kudos on you for arresting, at least.
I was going to say, I'm like, what?
You, like, that's great. That? Consequences?
It's like, whoa.
There's that guy on Twitter that he's one of those, like, or not Twitter, TikTok. He's one of those, like, call out people that, like, investigates or whatever. And when they get fired, he goes, "Look, here comes a consequence, consequence, consequence." Love it. Sean, explain to me and Hayden why you hate Citadel.
So Citadel was something that I didn't expect to be a spectacular show. I know that. All right. I expected it to be a fun little spy show. And in some regards, it is that. It's basically just if someone ate every single spy movie ever and then regurgitated it and diarrheaed it, and that's what we're forced to consume. It's like it's remnants of some great spy stuff, but it's really just like not as tasty. I think that one of the other big issues here is, you know, I just think about this other show that I have, Drops of God, on Apple TV Plus, which is about wine tasting. Very different show, but it's actually on a vineyard. It's actually in a location. This is just everything. Everything is a green screen. It's very similar to Ghosted in that way, where this is like the TV version of Ghosted. You know, this is something that my wife and I are sort of, she might actually like it, so I'll be proper to her, but I am hate watching it, and I just like to be close to my wife watching something, so, you know, that, like, I'm okay with suffering through it in that regard. But, you know, you have these great actors in Richard Madden and Priyanka Chopra Jonas, where, like, they have this charisma that is just not being utilized at all, and we're not even caring about these characters at all. You have Stanley Tucci and Leslie Manville in here, too, which is just, like, they are the heads of both rival organizations kind of going at it as well, and that's a great part of this too that I would love to see like more fleshed out, but nothing is truly fleshed out. Nothing is truly realized. It is only on the third episode. Hey, maybe it makes a rebound, but like, it's just really tough to watch this. And it's unfortunate because Amazon definitely spent so much goddamn money. I think about $300 million, and it's just like, spend $300 million to buy them all a plane ticket to film at the fucking place that they're supposed to film at. Like, I just get so upset by this kind of stuff where I know, trust me, I know it's just a dumb spy show. It's supposed to be a dumb spy show. I get that. But it's just like, they're wasting a lot here, a lot of talent. And I want to see something better.
Did you know that there's going to be spinoffs of Citadel?
That was their plan. Their plan is that they're going to have Citadels in all the different other countries and have foreign shows that are going to be in Citadel. That was their plan. And this is their flagship. And so this isn't going as well. So they're having trouble like getting those off the ground now.
Are you a lone wolf in your opinion, Sean? Or is it pretty universally just like bad?
The internet despises it pretty much.
Rotten Tomatoes.
You were the one that said everyone despised it, by the way. You're the one that said that to me.
Rotten Tomato has it at 53 or 54% critics, 70-something percent audience. I'm pulling some quotes here. Citadel is a Spark Notes version of an action series, so devoid of detail and narrative momentum that you'd wonder what the hell happened in the with the production if it wasn't already reported in the entertainment trades. And that's the ringer. And they're saying it looks cheap and all kinds of stuff, that the leads are good, but the rest of it kind of falls apart. Apparently there are a lot of disagreements over the original show writers, I think, or no, the screenwriting collective, Midnight Radio, left over creative differences with the Russos.
Well, that's not great. I just think it's also a sin that Richard Madden is given an American accent, where this guy has the most beautiful voice of all time, and you're sticking him with an American accent that is just not great. It's like a little bit better than Benedict Cumberbatch, but just, well, it's a little tough. Like, it's just, you can tell he's really like kind of enunciating every little bit of that American accent that he can.
So apparently, when I think of bad spy stuff, I tend to think of The Gray Man. Is this worse than The Gray Man?
Yes, because I thought Gray Man was not good, but the action was good enough that I enjoyed Gray Man for that. Like, I remember, like, there were action sequences that I was like, okay, these are at least good, so I'm getting something out of this. In this, the action is piss poor. Like, that's just such an unfortunate thing. It's like, yeah, because, this was an action spy movie, a bad spy TV show. I'm expecting to not be blown away by this. I know that. Like, I'm not that naive. But I did expect to at least see, like, you know, some fun action that was gripping and interesting. And instead, like, you know, he's skiing. And, like, there's a scene where he's skiing. He's definitely not skiing. He's definitely not even close to a mountain. And that's so tough for me. Like, dude, have a stuntman or something. Come on.
It looks like they went through extensive reshoots and that they, quote unquote, competing ideas for the pilot or competing versions of the pilot. Yeah,
it looks like worse and worse.
Yeah, Hollywood Reporter has a really long article that I'm just skimming while we're talking here. But it seems like, yeah, Amazon chose to bet on the Russos in days before Christmas. Applebaum was let go, says one source connected to the project. What should have happened was Joe turning to Josh and saying, let's get together and fix this instead of going solo. That's not what partners are supposed to do. Yeah, there was a lot of bad blood behind the scenes here.
Wow.
Interesting.
At this point with the Russos, I just don't know what's happened with them. Like, I just, their career is, I'm going to keep rooting for them, but I think a Marvel movie might be what's needed to get their shit back on track, because everything they've done since Marvel has been just pretty awful, to be honest with you.
And it's weird because they manage Endgame, which is just this like a perfect cap on everything. But it's baffling to me that they could, like, you know, just after that have nothing. And, you know, I mean, I get that they wanted to try something different with Cherry, but God help them, that was just so odd. And, you know, then they've just been putting their names on a lot of things at this point, which, I don't know, it's not working as well.
When they've got Extraction.
They do have. I was wondering. I knew there was some other action series, and Extraction's there, which I love Extraction.
Oh my God. All right, Hayden, hit us with your rave, it looks like.
Yeah, so my rave is about, it ties into what we were talking earlier with Guardians 3, because while watching Guardians 3, I found myself getting so excited. I had mentioned the idea of a superhero show or a superhero movie that reinvigorates how I feel about this stuff, and how excited I was to be watching a movie that made me feel like that again in that genre. And then I realized James Gunn is about to do such great things for the DC Universe. And this is something I've been talking about for a couple months now, ever since the lineup of stuff that that they've revealed him and Peter Safran for the new DCU. But I think that there's such an opportunity here, and I think he's going to do such a good job with creating this new tone, with creating a DCU that is more consistent and one that understands characters and giving heart and levity to this stuff rather than just pumping out soulless stuff, which, you know, I've always been a DC person over a Marvel person. Don't get me wrong, I love Marvel, but DC was where my heart originally fell in love with this stuff. And it's just been a mess. DC has been a disaster for quite some time. And I think while watching Guardians 3, I realized James Gunn really is the guy with his passion, with his soul, and his vision for what DC can be when there's care put into it. I just think that it's going to be such great things. And so I found myself getting so excited and hopeful for what this brand new phase of the DC universe could look like.
So I'm just wondering one thing, and you guys are better DC experts than me, so I need to like pitch this to you, because, you know, James Gunn pulled the old Dick Cheney thing where he's just like, you know, I'm going to find a writer and director for Superman Legacy. And then he's just like, it's me the whole time. Can he make a good Superman movie? Because from where I stand, I worry about him making a Superman movie, because he's better at the off-kilter, goofy characters. And I just think, I do worry about that. Now, I'm going to open the floor to you, because I'm not as big of a DC expert. What do you think?
Oh, go ahead, Joe.
I think he totally can. And the reason why is because he's good with outsiders, and Superman is the ultimate outsider. And if you cultivate that story and you tell the story from that perspective, which I think he's going to do by focusing on like the younger Superman trying to fit in and find his place, which is kind of like a little bit of what they started doing with like Man of Steel. But it obviously took a turn when you got the Batman versus Superman. I think that there's a lot that can be cultivated there. And that's also why Smallville was such a really popular series, was because it focused on those relationships. It focused on the coming of age. I really think he's going to be able to pull those strings appropriately.
I agree. I think he's aware. I'm sure that this script is less James Gunny than a lot of his other stuff. You know, he's kind of developed this very specific vibe that everybody knows him for. And I think that there will be pieces of what we know James Gunn as a filmmaker, but I think overall this is going to be a much more hopeful, less like crude type movie. And I think he knows that it needs to be. I think he's very much aware that this Superman movie has to be a completely different thing than what he's ever done.
Yeah.
And I think that he's likely going to very much switch what we expect from him with this next movie.
I'm rooting for it, definitely. Like especially because I want James Gunn to do well and the Superman movie to do well. But it was just like when I found out he was directing it, I was just like, oh boy. Like it was a little bit of a shock to
the system.
At first I was like, I don't know if he's the guy for this, but I at this point he hasn't really missed for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna just put some trust into the fact that I really like his vision for DC. Even stuff like Booster Gold. Sean, I don't know if you're familiar with Booster Gold.
I've heard about this, yeah.
It's just such a it's such a James Gunny thing to do, to be like, our first phase of the new DCU, we're doing Booster Gold. I'm all here for it. That character is so funny, and I always just thought it was hilarious growing up watching and reading about that character. And so I'm just really excited, because I think we're going to hit the perfect balance with this new phase of DCU of like crude, dark, which is what DC's always been beloved for, and also hopeful human characters being told in these larger, bigger stories. And so I think he's really found, at least from looking at this first phase of DCU, he's found a perfect hybrid of like his signature kind of darker style. And then on top of that, what DC needs, which is like a bit more of like the Marvel shot in regards to, you know, some hopefulness, for lack of better wording, in the stories.
I remember too that when Marvel started, Iron Man was the start, right? And it wasn't necessarily, Iron Man wasn't the biggest character. So it was a really fascinating pull for them to start with a character like that. Now they're starting with Superman, who's arguably the most well-known, but they also, like Hayden was saying, have such a mix of different levels of character in there that I think this is going to be something special, hopefully. Yeah, I'm pulling for it.
I think DC's had a real problem with like people who don't care about these stories and people who don't care about comic books, just a bunch of suits being like, yeah, sure, I think people like that. Do that. And I think James Gunn and Peter Safran, they love this stuff. They grew up with this stuff. They have a real passion for the source material. Mm-hmm. And that's what you need to jumpstart this universe again and to really get people caring about it, is have the people making it have the same level of care for the people who are going to see it.
Yeah.
And we're getting a James Mangold Yeah. Swamp Thing movie.
That's so fucking cool. Like, that's so exciting.
I'm the most excited for that. And that's why, like, I really need Indiana Jones to be good, because first of all, James Mangold doesn't need goodwill. He's made a lot of great movies. So if Indiana Jones screws up, it will still be fine. I'm still excited for Swamp Thing, but I want that momentum to keep kicking all the way to Swamp Thing.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Swamp Thing coming out in 2033. New films this week. Sean, Book Club, The Next Chapter, your Thursday movie?
Oh, you know, there's not a Thursday movie for me right now. AMC is being sluggish with the times. I think it's only Book Club, so I can't do it. I can't do it. I could see bad movies before. I can't do it.
Crater hits Disney Plus. Fool's Paradise hits theaters. Blackberry hits limited theaters, which you should see Blackberry if you have an opportunity.
I want to see that so bad. If that comes out on Thursday, that'll be my Thursday movie without a doubt.
Joe, have you seen that one yet, Blackberry?
I did. Yeah, I did.
That's good.
It's really good. It's interesting because cool. The way I described it is like the first 10 minutes, I was like, oh God, what are we doing here? But then it quickly overcomes like a very slow, what I thought was a slow start, to deliver like a riveting movie. And Glenn Howerton is phenomenal in it. Absolutely phenomenal in it. I just love movies like that. I love like diving into the business of shit, you know? And
Yeah. I was nervous from the trailer, but I am hearing good things. And I was watching the trailer the other day and I was like, that's Dennis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yep. For the entire trailer, I didn't realize it. It
blew
nuts.
Me away.
He's phenomenal.
There's a lot of Wikipedia movies coming out right now, and there have been like Wikipedia shows coming out, basically like saying like this is a true story that occurred. And it's just been like, you know, between like all the scandal ones coming out, like The Dropout and everything, and you know, new ones coming through, like the Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie.
I was just going to mention that.
Like, so there are a lot of those, and so I think people are getting a little bit winded by them. I hope this one can land. I'm so excited to see it.
I'm excited for it. The Mother hits Netflix. The Mother being the Jennifer Lopez film.
I heard about this one. I can't wait.
Why?
I don't know. It's just like when someone told me, like, there was like an ad for it on a podcast, and I was like, oh, that sounds so ridiculous. I'm in.
And then The Tutor hits VOD and digital. I'm actually going to watch that after we're done recording.
There we go.
So I am excited for all that. Hayden, thank you once again for joining us. Tell people where they can find you.
You can find us at the Dive In Moviecast on Instagram, on Twitter. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We have weekly episodes. Most recent episode was Bo is Afraid. Wild.
Yeah.
I think we're actually going to be chatting Guardians this week on there as well. So if you want to hear some of my elaborated thoughts and me lingering on it for an hour and 15 minutes, then you'll be able to find that there. My individual Instagram is at Hayden Kutras. You can find me at the same name on Letterboxd.
Excellent. Excellent. Always a pleasure to have you on. Always fun to discuss this stuff, especially with a big movie like Guardians.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks for having me back. I'm always down to be on here.
And you are also always.
You're also always welcome.
I welcome myself. I was like, I'm always welcome. Next Sunday, you'll have me back.
In this case, you're right.
Oh my God. Sean and I will be releasing a summer movie preview pod this week, so look out for that as well. Otherwise, what the hell are we going to talk about next week? What movie?
The mother.
Yeah.
Honestly, like maybe, but I think I bet there's going to be movie times for BlackBerry. So I bet that if not though, there are times already available for Fool's Paradise, and that movie looks kind of awesome. It's Charlie
I don't even Day's know what Fool's Paradise is.
Oh, check it out! It's Charlie Day's directorial debut.
Oh, that
so
was,
two
wow.
It's Always Sunny members are coming out with a movie in the same week, which is just it's a very minor Oppenheimer Barbie kind of situation.
This cast, though.
Yeah, dude.
Ray Liotta, Kate Beckinsale, John Malkovich, Adrian Brody, Jason Sudeikis, Jillian Bell. What the? Glenn Howerton, Edie Falco.
In the interim, you need to watch the trailer for this. It is so fun.
Common. What is happening here? How did he get this many people? Jason Bateman, apparently?
Yep.
What the hell? I don't know. All right, see you next week.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.